We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I am back from Stillwater, the Oklahoma State basketball team. That's two in a row, Kyle. I believe that's called a winning streak.
Come on.
Two in a row is called a winning streak, Kyle. They went from 0-6 to winning two in a row. I was up there, and I must say it was kind of a weird game. It was nip and tuck throughout, and in the last 7-8 minutes, Oklahoma State did what they couldn't do for much of the year, and that's close. And it was an impressive win and one they really needed, Kyle.
Well, it was weird because it felt like they kind of owned the game throughout, but they could never build more than like a 4 or 5 point lead. They never trailed. I went back and looked at the play-by-play, and I think TCU tied it at like 47 all, but Oklahoma State never trailed. And then they really did what teams have been doing to them, and that's get out ahead early. And they did this the last couple of games, get out ahead early and then shut it down late. It's so hard to come back from like an 8 or 10 point deficit in the last 5 minutes, especially if you've been trying to kind of claw your way back in it, like TCU was trying to do. So yeah, it was impressive. Juwan was obviously great. Jeffrey Carroll continued his outstanding play. What stood out to you most in person versus having watched the rest of the games on TV this year?
What stood out in person? Well, first, TCU is just kind of an oddly constructed team. It just looks weird. They have the big Russian, and then they don't have much else, which I guess is why Jamie Dixon is the coach now, because they weren't very good. But it was kind of an odd-looking TCU team. But the thing that stuck out to me most with OSU was obviously, like, we knew Juwan Evans was really good, and I knew he could dribble the basketball. But in person, like, his handles are just obscene, just absurd. And that stood out right away. And I'll tell you what else stood out, Kyle. Like, Devon Dillard is like a real Big 12 caliber athlete. Like that probably stood out the most to me. He was kind of like everywhere, it felt like, down at the floor level. And more than anything, Kyle, just the fact that they didn't turn the ball over stood out. Just, it was a really, really solid performance. And I think more than anything, I think Brad's realized that you got to kind of slow it down a little bit on offense and defense. And I think that's really benefited them with the lack of turnovers and just the overall quality of play. But the thing that stood out most was Juwan Evans, his handles, and just his sheer dominance. And I think Devon Dillard is turning into a guy he can rely on. He spoke after the game that he was cowboy strong, cowboy tough, country strong, whatever you want to call it, he said, which I thought was hilarious. And he said he could be an elite defender. And I think that might be his ceiling, Kyle, is a lockdown defensive guy who kind of just makes those dunks and plays on offense too.
Yeah, Dillard is a freak. I mean, athletically, and I think we all sort of knew that. I mean, you can only know so much from watching YouTube footage from high school. I mean, he hasn't been playing. I think he played like 24 minutes combined last year. Obviously, played against Kansas, has been playing more. But if he's a real asset, like if he continues to be, and he seems like he wants to be, he seems interested in playing defense and in doing what Brad Underwood wants, then I feel like that, I don't know if it changes the team or the trajectory of the team, but it certainly gives you just a kind of a bonus guy that you didn't know you had going in. I mean, he might be the most athletic guy on the team for his height or just at all. And, man, some of those dunks, Markel-like.
Yeah, mean, the windmill to close the show.
That was insane.
Like my hopes got pretty high once I realized he was clear and free and could do whatever he wanted. And my hopes were far surpassed when he did a windmill. I thought he was just going to, you know, dunk it really hard.
Yeah.
That was spectacular. And you're right. Like, this is a bonus getting this guy to play well, because earlier in the season, it just felt like Brad couldn't play him.
Yeah.
And Brad was even asked, like, what's the difference now as opposed to earlier in the year with Devon Dillard? And he just said, he listens. he listens to me. Like, so obviously he had trouble getting through to him early on, but it seems like the light's clicking, and that's a huge thing going forward. Do you want to go over the five thoughts real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
First, just Kyle Boone, five thoughts. You can go on the blog and read it, the win over TCU. How good was Juwan Evans? We kind of went over that. Just, yeah, like he was even asked in post-game, you know, what was the difference tonight? You had 27 and you hadn't been scoring very much, and he just goes, fouls.
Yeah.
I'm not in foul trouble. Like it's really that simple. So he was awesome.
I did want to ask you, do you still feel like he takes, because this has been my thing for the last few games, it feels like he takes 2 to 4 shots a game that, I don't know. It feels like he should find Carroll or Forte from three. I don't know. Like I still, like he was great, obviously, but it still doesn't feel like his greatness is necessarily fitting in within like a team offensive game. Did you get that sense at all or no?
I didn't. I actually thought there were times in that game where he was dribbling around and you could tell he kind of thought, like a split second kind of thought about shooting a three several times, and he didn't, and he either drove or passed. I thought it seemed to me like he was making a real conscious decision not to just jack it from everywhere.
Yeah.
And he got to the rim a lot, which I thought that's his best asset, is his floater game was working. He's really good at getting to the rim. And TCU was switching on the screens a lot to where he was matched up with a big, and that's just game over. And I thought he did a really good job exploiting that every time that they tried to switch on him. So yeah. I thought he was great. And I don't think I saw that, Kyle. I think I saw him kind of rein it in a little bit.
Yeah. I guess I just feel like some of those shots that he hits around the rim that are a little bit circusy, it feels great when they go in and he's 11 for 17, but it's just as easy to be 7 for 17. And then all of a sudden you've got a close game late. And I don't know. I guess I just, there's a part of me that wishes that he wouldn't take those shots sometimes. But then the unintended consequence of that is that he's not getting to the rim, you know? So I don't know. I guess I don't know how to feel about it, but I don't know. There was just something lingering that it's like, this is great, it's awesome, but it I don't know. For me, it didn't feel totally like he fit into the team offense.
Well, if he does what he did against TCU, OSU will be in great shape.
Yeah.
Regardless.
True.
If he plays that well.
Yeah.
Thought number two, I didn't know this was a stat in basketball. Time of possession allowed played a huge factor for Oklahoma State. The Cowboys are last in the nation of 351 teams in time of possession allowed, meaning OSU's opponents shoot the ball more quickly than any other team's opponent. But they kind of tighten things up, and Kyle says it's the equivalent of getting a coverage sack in football. They played some defense where they forced TCU to run out the shot clock a few times.
Yeah, and that's really been their goal. I mean, Underwood said it after Tech that they were trying to play more between their man and the rim instead of going for these steals. And you can tell. I mean, teams are just taking longer to shoot and getting shot clock violations. And I mean, before they'd go for a steal in the first 5 seconds and Baylor or Kansas would get a layup, and that's why you're last in the country in time of possession for the opposing team on defense.
Yeah, I think he mentioned that they were up till like 2 a.m. recently, I think maybe before the Tech game, switching their defense. So he's obviously learned what works and what doesn't work with his players, which is the sign of a great coach. I think he's showing some of his adjustments on the fly, and it's been good. And obviously, their offense is their strength. And thought number three, a real offense is being ran in Stillwater, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
And just listen to these stats here. The Cowboys are fourth nationally in adjusted offensive efficiency, scoring 122.4 points per 100 possessions behind UCLA, Villanova, and Kentucky, three top-ranked teams in the top 10. Like, that's absurd. And he says it's more than just the Juwan Evans Memorial offense that you were touching on. They're moving the ball, and it's like what's the equivalent of going from Ford's offense to Brad Underwood's? It's like going from your first car when you're in high school. I had a 92 Ford Explorer. It was beige.
I had a 92 Crown Victoria, so we were in the same.
Yeah. I call it the dirt bucket. That was its nickname. And it's like going from that to like one of these brand new like Audis with like the light up armrests.
The light up armrests.
I was just in an Audi the other day and it blew me away. There was like it lit up on the sides. It was really cool. But going from one of those to a luxury mobile is basically the difference.
Yeah, and to me it's just the flow of the offense. You know, Ford's offenses thought that flow was running the weave out beyond the three
yes,
point
the
line
weave, yes,
like that was the extent of their movement on offense, and then they'd run the shot clock down and take a 27 footer, and and that was that. And you play defense. And this is different in that everything is attacking. It feels like. I don't know if that's the reality, but it feels like everything that they do on offense is based on attacking the rim, and you've got the I love the thing they do where they run the point guard around a high ball or a high screen by the free throw line, and you kind of free up the point guard to make a decision whether he wants to shoot or keep going, and then you can roll that big man back down the lane if he's Oklahoma State's guys aren't necessarily athletic enough right now to make that work, but I don't know. Everything. I love how attacking everything is right now.
You betcha. Thought number four, Devon Dillard has been a revelation. We kind of touched on that. Just I want to point out in Kyle's thoughts, he said he went from playing 3.1 minutes per game and not appearing in eight games to 11.8 minutes per game and 5 points per game. So the numbers even back up the fact that he's making a much bigger impact.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he's going to play even more going forward. He's kind of the new Carroll in terms of a six man, it feels like, a little bit.
Just like, dawned on me, he wears number 24, Tony Allen's old number.
Yeah,
kind of like that.
Like he's kind of him and Carroll are kind of getting what we thought might be Leighton Hammond's minutes at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to take a turn to negative town, but Leighton Hammond has regressed, has he not?
Yeah, I don't know. I just think he was never really. I just think he never really progressed. I think he never really developed into what we thought that he could be. I don't know that he's worse than last year. I just don't think that he ever really got better over the course of his career.
Yeah, he's kind of he has a odd game. He's kind of a tweener a little bit.
He's been hitting the boards though. I think that's a big deal. And Underwood's convinced him that, you know, you get boards, you get easy putbacks. That's kind of his, you know, stay in your lane. That's kind of his role right now.
Mm-hmm. And last thought, real quick, Oklahoma State dominated in the paint. I got a shout out to Carson for bringing this to my attention in our Slack chat. I don't think I did.
Yeah.
I got an unnecessary shout out.
I don't know what that was all about.
I was like, okay, cool. But they dominated the paint, which, you know, they don't do a lot when Solomon and Gasan seem like they're getting foul trouble in about 5 minutes. So that was good to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Okay. We got a fun guest this week, don't we?
Yeah, Matt Emilian will be so proud.
Yeah, he will swoon. It's time for the Coop Ale Works Guest of the Week. Coop Ale Works brewing great tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale, or the refreshing Horty Toad Blonde. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Ale Works, and please remember to drink responsibly. We've got a former cowboy back. Blake Jarwin coming on the podcast. We're going to give him a call, see what he's up to, see what the future holds for him, and talk a little bit about last season. Blake.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, it's Kyle Porter and Carson Cunningham.
Hey, nice. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. You're on the podcast. What are you up to right now?
Well, I just actually pulled up to my house. Got a nice workout in already this morning, so I'm just kind of chilling now.
How many times a day are you working out right now?
I usually go, I'll work out about 6 days a week, and in the morning I'll go, you know, get the actual workout in. I'll go back later and kind of do some recovery work.
Well, Blake, just tell us what's going on right now with like the NFL and everything. Just what, I know you said you're working out, but what's the timeline like, and just what are you doing right now to get prepared for the NFL draft just as a whole?
Yeah, Victor Stolako and Ashton Lampkin actually just got back from the East-West Shrine Game I got back on Sunday, and you know that was kind of a big part of our kind of the trying to get there. There's a lot of scouts out there watching our practices and just kind of, you know, trying to get an idea of who we are as a player. And you know, I think that we showed out pretty good for OSU, and it was a good time. It was a lot of work, but you know, besides that, now that we're back, it's really it's kind of a different workout regimen. You want to get ready. You want to have a good bench press and run a fast 40. And, you know, obviously for me, a big part would be my blocking and catching a lot of balls. So I think that'll be my concentration from here on out. Go ahead.
What's the number one thing that you feel like you need to show out well in terms of your pro day and just NFL people looking at you that they might doubt or they might say this is a weakness? What's the one thing you want to kind of prove to them with all that stuff coming up?
I think a big part for me was I think I did a pretty decent job at the Shrine game. It was just kind of showing that I can block a little bit with my hand on the ground. We didn't do a whole lot of that this past year, but, you know, that was a big question mark with a lot of scouts that I talked to, and I feel like I really improved throughout the week and, you know, showed that I could do it. Another thing is my speed, I guess. I haven't seen my projected speed, but I don't think it's really I think I'll run a little bit quicker than that, so I think that'll help me out.
Blake, there's not really like a handbook as far as like when your college career ends, like how to go about, you know, hiring an agent, how to go about all this. Just, and I'm sure skill players like quarterbacks, receivers, and running backs have agents, you know, calling them all the time. What was your process like picking an agent and kind of making that transition from college player to potential pro prospect?
Yeah, it was definitely different. It was, you know, kind of a cool experience having all these guys kind of call you and trying to, you know, talk you up and trying to get you to go with them. But I kind of went about it. My parents were really involved and helped me out. I kind of had them find three or four that they really liked and thought were real personable and not, you know, out just for my money. And so I actually signed with Kelly Masters, who she came really highly recommended from a few family friends. She's based out of Oklahoma, so she's around all the time, and, you know, she's always there, and she's helped me out so much so far. So it's a pretty cool experience.
What you've had obviously a long career at Oklahoma State and had some just, you guys played in some crazy games. What do you feel like is the most memorable game for you that you guys played in?
The one that pops into my head is Texas last year. We kind of went down there, and it was a wild ride. Like you said, people used to call us the Cardiac Cowboys because we would, you know, always have those late comebacks and stuff like that. And that's kind of one that pops into my head. That kind of that West Virginia also 2 years ago. That was kind of a, you know, one of those games that I always remember. And I think the bowl game too this year, Colorado going out like that. That's kind of, you know, storybook ending for me. I kind of enjoyed having a game like that just to finish my career off with.
Yeah, you scored a touchdown in your last game. That had to be a pretty special feeling.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I'm glad, you know, Juwan Fields kind of helped me out and got a great block on the guy, and I was able to just kind of run through the corner of the end zone. But I mean, it was fun being out there with those guys one last time and just really being a part of it. It's coming together like that. You know, you work so hard, and to go out like that, it was awesome.
What are you thinking in the huddle when Mason calls a play or a play is relayed in and you kind of know, hey, there's a good chance this is coming to me. I might score on this. What are you thinking as you kind of line up to run that route?
My heart starts beating a little faster. yeah, you know, making sure I'm focused, trying to read the defense a little bit, see where I need to be to, you know, be in the best possible spot to get the ball and, you know, get the most points or most yards I can. And Mason does a great job finding the open guy and just throwing it to where, you know, only we can get it. You know, to have a quarterback like that throughout college is, you know, that's remarkable. And J-Dub as well, you know, those guys they're just leaders of the team, and to have guys like that, you know, the utmost respect for those guys. And, you know, I wouldn't be anything without them. So all credit to them and all the coaches and all the players.
One of our friends named Matt Amillion is like he should be your agent. He thought you should have got the ball about 10 to 15 times a game. Was it ever frustrating for you when you went spells during games where you were just blocking and not catching the ball? It had to be, right?
I mean, as a competitor, you always kind of want the ball. But when you have guys, you know, like James Washington, Jalen McCleskey, Juwan Fields, Austin Hayes, all those guys, and then in the backfield, Justice Hill, Chris Carson. You know, it gets frustrating, but at the same time, when they have the ball, that's all right. If I can make a block and get James, or, you know, to help Mason get the ball off to James or Juwan or Chris Lacy, or, you know, spring a run for Justice or Chris, it was, you know, it's just as rewarding. It's a team game. It's not all about one guy. And at the end of the day, if we won the ball game, that's all that mattered to me.
Tell me something about, or tell us something about Jason McIndoe that we don't know, that's not is funny or that he's, you know, something crazy that he does, or.
he's a goofball. He's a good guy. I'm trying to think of something that's kind of just off the wall that he does.
He's from like from Montana or something?
Yeah, he's originally from the Seattle area, and, you know, he played college ball at Washington State, and then he played a little bit of NFL and NFL Europe, and moved to. He coached Washington or Montana State for a few years, and Yeah, I mean, you know, he's just kind of a little guy. He's a good dude. He'd do anything for anybody. And, you know, just to have him come in, I was truly blessed to have him come in and kind of help me just focus and clean up my footwork. And it would just sit me down at times where if I ever needed something, he was always there for me.
Blake, growing up in Tuttle, were you an OSU fan? Because I know there's a lot. It's more of an OU town. You know, you got Jason White's name on the water tower. Were you always an OSU fan, or is that something that just came along through football?
Well, it did come along, actually, because, you know, Jason White actually lives about a mile from my house in Tuttle. And I've had the opportunity to meet him a few times. And, you know, growing up, when a guy wins a Heisman, you're like, oh. Because it was kind of right when I moved to Tuttle that he was in the running for it and stuff like that. So he was kind of, you know, my hero at the time. But as I grew older and older, I wasn't highly recruited. And actually, you know, I emailed OU and OSU, and OSU emailed me back, and I got to come check out the facilities. And as soon as they emailed me, I was all about it. I was a Poke fan for life now. And, you know, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. You know, I bleed orange and black now, and I couldn't be more happier about where I landed.
Yeah, that's awesome. Who's a guy, you know, we talk – on this podcast about guys that we see and you know, guys that show out on Saturdays, but who's a guy in the program that you feel like maybe hasn't gotten a chance yet or is just younger? You know, we've heard a lot about Tyron Johnson. I think Carson called him we've heard that he's a cross between Odell Beckham and Jerry Rice, apparently. But who's a guy that's younger in the program that hasn't maybe played or that we haven't seen that much that you think is really going to be a star?
Yeah, I mean, T. Billy, man, he is an athlete. I'm excited to watch him play on Saturdays. He's something special, and it's going to be cool to kind of watch him just get after it on game days. But, you know, a guy that really hasn't played that much, and, you know, he's a Cowboy back with me, and so we don't get all the fame all the time, but, you know, he's a necessary piece of the offense at times. Britton Abbott, you know, coming up, I think he'll be a redshirt junior now. And, you know, he reminds me a lot of Jeremy Seaton. He's just kind of, you know, that guy. He's smart. Good player. He'll put his head down and kind of hit somebody. And I think he'll be a vital part of, you know, if we need a, you know, 2 yards to get a first down, he'll be the guy that makes the block to spring it. Or, you know, if we need to get it in the end zone, he'll be the guy to push the pile and make sure that we get it in. I'm excited to watch him play. Great kid, you know. And then you got Keenan Brown in that room. You got all kinds of animals coming up through, you know, recruiting classes. So I'm excited to watch it grow. You know, to see an offense like that with so many weapons, it's going to be fun to watch how they utilize all of them.
Yeah, they're loaded for sure. Now, when you were in high school, I don't think they were using the Cowboy backs. I think 2011, right around then, when Whedon and them were there, they weren't even using tight ends and Cowboy backs. Did they kind of explain to you when you were getting recruited how they were going to utilize that, or how did that work?
Yeah, that kind of just popped up my redshirt freshman year. I remember I walked on as a receiver, and so I remember I was catching balls during a pat and go drill, and Coach Gundy kind of pulled me aside and said, "Hey, we're going to start a tight end program, our position. And I mean, do you want to be a part of it? Because we'll pull you aside right now, and you can go, you know, start working with the linemen and getting your footwork right." And I was like, "Oh, absolutely!" Jumped at the opportunity. And you know, Jeremy Seaton was kind of the first guy to show off what it did. He was, you know, fullback tight end guy at the time as well. So I got to kind of sit behind him and watch how he played the game. And then, you know, we kind of just started pulling guys from different positions. He came from fullback to play some tight end receiver, and Zach Veach converted back to tight end with us. We just kind of took everybody that – I like to think we took the best of the team and, you know, made it the best position. But it was cool because, yeah, I kind of was – you know, that's kind of when it started again, is me, Veach, and Seaton, and that's just awesome to be a part of something like that.
I imagine you got to pig out at the training table too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one thing I've been blessed with, is I can eat about anything and not really have to worry about gaining too much weight. So it's been fun, and you know, I actually got the go ahead. I can still eat up there, so I'm going to take advantage of that.
There you go. That's awesome. Blake, we talk a lot on here about Carson and I kind of geek out over uniform stuff, and we actually have a little deal that's sponsored by Chris's University Spirit, where we talk about unis every week, do a uniform review. What was your favorite uniform combination that you guys wore in your time at OSU?
Man, that's a good question. This past year, we're definitely, I mean, they're awesome. All of our, I think the Baylor uniform that we wore, the white on white on white, was definitely kind of my, I love that look. I think that that looks pretty clean. I'd have to, if I broke it down, though, I'd have to say that the white helmet with the black stripe and the chrome badge is definitely my favorite helmet.
That's a great answer. Jordan Stearns was actually on here a couple weeks ago, and he said the Baylor combination as well.
Yeah, I just think that, and that was kind of the first time we got to put on the white jerseys, and we just went all out with it with the white pants and the white helmet. I think it was just kind of awesome to see us kind of do that. But, and then I don't remember the game. If I, it might have been Texas, where we kind of walked out, and you got to see kind of our reflective jerseys when we were walking out of the tunnel, and that. Yeah. When I heard about that, I saw it on TV a few days later or on Twitter or something like that. It was just kind of cool. I mean, have stuff like that and at a program here. It's I mean, that's awesome that they kind of they take care of us like that. And, I'm happy I got to, you know, bring home a couple of those new jerseys to hang on my wall.
Yeah, how's that work? You just, like, get to ransack your locker and just steal everything? Or how does that work when you're leaving?
Well, you know, we pay for our items that we want to take, but I mean, but if it's, you know, old cleats or I couldn't tell you how many practice shorts I've had, you know, just kind of stored away in my locker, and I got to take some of those home the other day. It's just socks everywhere, you know, compression shorts, socks, old shirts we used to wear for, you know, winter conditioning, stuff like that. Yeah, I definitely got like a whole new closet worth of stuff.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Blake, tell me about Mike Gundy, like your first interactions with him, then playing for him, and just what he's like probably away from the public. Just give us some insight into Mike Gundy and what it's like to play for him.
Yeah. You know, first coming on as a walk-on, I was a pretty shy guy as it is, but I remember just being so intimidated. You know, the coach of the Oklahoma State Cowboys is, you know, right beside me in the elevator, but first thing he does is just crack a joke at me and just act like we've been friends for forever, so... Kind of just a real personable guy who, you know, he takes care of his players. And, you know, through the years, he kind of rode me a little bit to get me going, and I think I needed that at times, you know, just to, you know, push me to, you know, be what I can be. And you know, that's all you can ask for a coach looking back on it. And, you know, this year we started, and he had that mullet. And, I mean, having that, if it was a rough day during 2 days or something like that, you look over and he's got a mullet, you just kind of like, have to laugh and sit back and just kind of take it in. And your head coach has a mullet and you're coaching a D1 program like that. It's stuff like that, you know? You know, I mean, people don't ever see that. I remember talking last week at the Shrine game and people were like, dude, did your coach really have a mullet? And I was like, yeah, that's just kind of the guy he is. He's, you know, until his son gets better grades, that's what he's going to wear. And, you know, it's just stuff like that that kind of makes him who he is.
Are you allowed to call Mike Gundy Big Daddy the way that Mason Rudolph is?
I've never attempted it. I'm sure I would get a different look than Mason would if I was going to say something like that. I'll just stick to Coach Gundy because, you know, I don't know if I could pull that off. But, you know, when I'm talking to my friends or whatever after I grad, or yeah, I finished up, I just started calling him Mike a little bit to my buddies. But I don't see myself ever doing that to his face.
Oh, that's great. Well, we'll get you out of here on this, Blake, because you've given us a lot of time. But what do you think you're going to miss the most? Not about Oklahoma State football, but about living in Stillwater and about going to school at Oklahoma State.
Man, that's a great question. I think that, you know, that it all kind of wraps around football, but just being around the guys, you know, that's kind of a bond that I've built over 5 years, and you know, I've gotten close to a lot of guys my age, and just you know, to really make all these memories with these guys is really important to me. I'll always cherish that. You know, running out of the tunnel, man, that's an incredible feeling, and I always hold that dear to me. And you know, just the whole opportunity that this place has given me. You know, I don't know if I could have done anywhere else, and I'm glad I didn't go anywhere else. This is my home, and you know, I can't wait to come back in 20 years with my kids and kind of walk them around and show them, you know, the classroom building that's probably 400 years old at that time. Kind of where I started my education. So
that's great. Yeah, that's I think that sort of sums up mine and Carson's experience going there as well. So, Blake, best of luck with the NFL and in the upcoming months, and appreciate you taking the time to join our podcast.
I appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Blake.
Okay, Blake Jarwin. He really loves Oklahoma State. He's all in. It's cool.
Yeah, from Tuttle, America, which is a huge OU town. Obviously, we mentioned Jason White growing up growing up down the block from him. Maybe he'll have his name on the water tower someday.
Yeah. I want
to
talk.
No, it's always fun talking to those guys who are fresh out of it.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about that interview as we kind of wrap up. But let's hear one more time from our sponsor, Chris's University Spirit.
Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom-printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head-to-toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit.
Okay. By the way, the players love the all whites. I was spot on in my my love for the whites from a young age. The Texas whites, the Oklahoma State whites.
Yeah. They're the runaway winners, I think, the all-whites. Yeah.
Jordan Stearns loved them. Blake Jarwin mentioned them. I think he's right about the helmets, though. The stripe with the chrome Marshall badge, that's right up there. I know
that's that was my third uniform. They wore those at TCU. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with him.
Yeah.
Those are awesome.
What do you think his chances are of getting in the NFL? You've been more... I mean, you've been there at games, seen him run. I mean, is he big enough? Is he fast enough? What do you think about him in the NFL?
Yeah, I think nowadays, and I meant to kind of ask him this, just I think the tight end has become such more of a pass-catching threat just in the last 5-10 years with the hybrid position that it's become. I think he has a real chance to play. I'm with Matt a million. I remember going on the radio and saying, why don't they throw the ball to Jarwin more? He looks like an NFL type tight end to me. And obviously, the agents agree. He said he had multiple people calling him. I think he'll have a real chance. Now, where he gets drafted, who knows? But get that guy in camp. I don't see why he couldn't. I mean, Billy Badgema played like 10 years in the league. And I know Billy Badgema had probably a better career numbers wise, but I think he has the same kind of skill set that Billy Badgema had. He can block, he can catch. So I think he's got a real chance to play in the league. And I think we might look back on it and say, why didn't they throw him the ball more?
Yeah, I guess they probably utilized Pettigrew more whenever – one of Gundy's favorites, by the way, Gundy bingo card.
Pettigrew's on the bingo card, no doubt. Him and Kendall Hunter.
And Ori Lemon.
And Ori Lemon, yes.
By the way, Blake Jarwin told me he is actually working out with Billy Badgema right now. So there you go.
That's right. He still lives in, I believe, UConn or Mustang around. Or Bethany, maybe. I think Billy's a Bethany kid. But, yeah, he still lives around here. And, gosh, Billy played forever.
He did. I mean, he outlasted so many guys.
Everyone. Rashawn.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
He had a great career.
Yeah, he really did.
And he didn't even really need to because he was like a doctor. He was like pre-med, like brilliant mind.
That's annoying.
Could have done whatever he wanted.
It's annoying. He's an NFL player who could be a doctor. That's brutal. Yeah, anything else that stood out from talking to Jarwin?
The fact that Mike Gundy has made national waves with his mullet. I mean, that he's got players from all around the country asking about it. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And just the fact, he went out on a high, the Alamo Bowl, catching a touchdown in his last game. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I feel like Jarwin has to have one of the highest yards per target. Times thrown at in the country. It felt like every time he was thrown at, it was like a 48 yard gain and either a touchdown or like getting down to the five. And I mean, like you said, I don't know if he was underutilized because they used him successfully, but it was really cool to see him score a touchdown in that Alamo Bowl and kind of go out on top, and cool to see somebody who I believe he was came in as a walk-on. Is that right?
Yeah. Preferred walk-on. Yeah.
Yeah. And just kind of develop into potential, professional football player. That's a cool thing. And I think that you know, I know that Gundy has invested a lot into the walk-on program and into taking it seriously. And I think that guys like Jarwin are kind of the fruits of that labor, and hopefully will continue to be over the next few years.
Yeah, there's a wall in the west end zone, kind of inside their facility. It's a wall of all the walk-ons they've had, lists every guy. And it kind of has these giant, like, fathead-type cutouts of certain guys. And just to think of the walk-ons they've had, Kyle, Brandon Whedon, Dan Bailey, obviously Jarwin. There's several others I'm forgetting. But they've had some really good football players start out as preferred walk-ons. So it's a program that Gundy has turned into something that they have great pride in, and it's been productive for them. And Jarwin's the latest example.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, what else you got? Tiger coming back this week. What are you? I know you're like secretary of the Tiger fan club. What are you expecting from him?
I'm texting Santa emojis to all my friends. Mac Daddy Santa is back. Don't we have to do the uniform review before we get into Tiger?
Well, no, I asked Jarwin. We mentioned it there, so we asked him what his favorite uniform was.
I kind of want to talk basketball uniforms.
Okay, yeah, we can mention Chris's again. They've been a great sponsor. Let's get to this week's uniform review, brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop on Campus Corner, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Okay, we'll move the Tiger talk to the side. The question that I wanted to ask you this week is, we've talked a lot about what numbers we like on specific players and positions in football. Like, we both love the single digit linebacker, and I think we both love the double digit quarterback, et cetera, et cetera. What about basketball? Do you have a preference for your point guard or your big man, or what do you like when it comes to basketball numbers?
Well, I'm just a single digit kind of guy in both sports. I mean, you just give me a single digit. It's the best. You look at the Thunder, like, the whole team practically is single digits. But as far as, like, my point guard, I want him to be definitely single digit, maybe number one, like Juwan. I love the fact Juwan's number one. It goes along with, actually, you know, you are the one guard. But as far as my big men, I don't know. Maybe I kind of equate numbers to players, you know. Like, we had a long discourse on Twitter. Our last podcast generated a lot of interest on the OSU basketball uniforms, and people were posting pictures of, like, Brett Robisch, Andre Owens. My first favorite player was Corey Williams. I go all the way back to Corey Williams, and I used to pretend I was Corey in the driveway, and I wore number 5.
Yeah.
Because that's the number Corey wore. So number 5 will always kind of be with me. And I wore number I graduated from 5 to 20 because that's what Adrian Peterson, the original, wore. So my basketball number changed with the graduating classes. I went from 5 to 20. And I couldn't be 50 for Big Country, because, like, back then, like, your jersey number, like, was equated to the size of the jersey. I wasn't quite big enough to wear the number 50. But I kind of equate numbers to players, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I'm with you on the point guard wearing number one or number two. I always loved that Mo Baker wore number one. So yeah, I'm with you in that. I remember, like, 15 stands out just because Rutherford wore it as a shooting guard.
John Lucas.
Yeah, John Lucas. Joey Graham was, what, 14. It was mm-hmm. It was fun to see all people tweeting, like, the old time players at us, like Shane Gadsden and I think.
Some old school guys.
Yeah, Glendon Alexander was in there, and no, I don't know.
Darwin Alexander, not Glendon.
Well, but there was a – I mean, Glendon was also a player. I think he's in jail now, by the way. But, yeah, I'm with you in that I equate my favorite player at the time. I mean, obviously 34 and 24 and 23 is great. Keontae Roberts wore 23. I think Sean Sutton also wore 20 maybe before Peterson. By the way, yeah. we need a differentiator between the Petersons, because I feel like the original gets kind of lost from the most recent one.
Yeah, for sure.
How do we do that? Can we just call
he's the original. Just call him the original. He was first.
What was Joe Atkins? 35?
Was he 35?
Pretty sure. That was a great number.
He's like, KD took my number.
Well, Joe Adkins definitely more beloved amongst Oklahomans. But Gottlieb was a weird – he was 44.
We asked him about that, didn't we?
Yeah, I can't remember what he said, though. I
can't remember his reasoning. He had a great answer for it. God, what was his reason? He's going to kill us if we don't remember.
The immortal Nolan Cox was number 41, I believe, or 43. I think he was 43.
Yeah, how did he get that?
I think it was like the only one they had left.
Yeah, it had to be, right? But like, why would they randomly print a 43? Was that like Jason Keep's old number? That was Jason Keep's old number.
I think it was.
But the reason we got on this old player photo kick on Twitter was just the templates of all the uniforms and just how much better they've been over the years and what they're currently wearing. And just there's no substitute for the curse of Cowboys.
No.
I mean, that's the best.
I think they're going to wear it on Saturday. It's Remember the 10 weekend.
That's right.
Friday is the anniversary, January 27th. But they will be there will be kind of a moment of silence and different things like that during the game. So we might see the curse of Cowboys against Arkansas.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And it's so what is it? It was 2001. So is this the 16th anniversary?
How crazy is that? Almost two decades. I mean, I'm sure talked about this, but I remember where I was, what I was doing. It's insane to me that was 16 years ago.
Yeah, I remember like it was yesterday, and just the uncertainty of it all, not knowing, you know, who was on what plane and all that was just a harrowing experience. Just as a kid, I can't imagine the people that actually went through it. So it's always an emotional day. It'll be interesting to see what old timers show up to remember the 10. It's always good to make sure everyone remembers, and it's always good to see the flowers and everything at the memorial. I actually, you know, I was at Gallagher Iba for the TCU game, and I still to this day walk by it and just stop and kind of look at everything just to kind of it just kind of stops you in your track every time you see it. The memorial there inside, that they did a really good job with that thing.
Yeah,
the way the whole thing is spread out and everything.
Well, and I feel like Oklahoma State does a really good. We talked about the Brooks Thompson night that they're going to have on Bedlam in February last time, and I don't know. I don't follow other schools and other programs or whatever, but it feels like they do a good job with a lot of this stuff. It's just difficult stuff to handle, and they've unfortunately had a lot of practice, but they've just done a great job of. And this even goes to like just bringing back old players, like Jarwin talked about. Like you know, and I know the football team sends gear to all their guys in the NFL, and I don't know. There's a real. I'm sure other programs do that as well, but it just feels like there's a really cool sense of family in Stillwater and at Oklahoma State.
For sure, no doubt, and it's unfortunate they've had to deal with so much tragedy. My gosh, everything they've had so many bad things, you almost forget some of them. I mean, just obviously the two plane crashes, but, you know, the Tyree Coger thing that happened just recently, I thought they handled that incredibly well.
Yeah.
You're right. And there is a kinship, you know, people that have gone to school in Stillwater, you know.
Yeah.
You kind of just understand each other, so.
For sure. By the way,
Saturday will be emotional for sure.
I just pulled up Nolan Cox's bio for Oklahoma State basketball. I'm gonna read it to you because it won't take very long. This is his entire bio. On okstate.com. Did not play high school basketball, period. Was a four-year letterman in football, period. Born April 8th, 1987, Nolan is the son of Jay and Phil Cox. He has two younger brothers, Austin and Mason. Nolan is a youth football coach for the Stillwater Pioneers fifth grade football team.
What?
He is majoring in marketing at Oklahoma State. That's the entire bio. I was actually helped him coach that Stillwater Pioneers football team. You know who was on that team?
Gavin Gundy?
No, but we did see Gundy out there a few times. It was who became the coach at Illinois? Tim Beckman?
Yeah.
His son was on that team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Shaping the minds.
Yeah. I don't know how much shaping we did. We kind of just stood on the side and laughed at everybody. But yeah, it was fun.
That's his entire bio. How did he become a walk-on? Did he just like, did Ford just see a guy who was taller than 6'6" and say, I need that guy?
They had Well, that's Underwood could use a few of those right now. But they used to have those tryouts every year. You remember? I mean, it's kind of like the kicker tryouts for football. Mm-hmm. And he went, and he was, I mean, Nolan was good. Like, we were on the girls' scout team, or the cowgirls' scout team together, excuse me. And he was, I don't know if I've told this story. I probably told it like 10 times, and I don't remember. But one time he, Courtney Paris, we were OU as the scout team, and we were playing the girls, and Coach Budke came over to me and Nolan and a couple other guys and said, "Look, Nolan, you're going to be Courtney Paris, and I want you to get after it. This girl is unbelievable. I don't know if you guys know about her, but she's unbelievable. She might be the best women's basketball player in the history of basketball." And we're like, yeah. okay. And so we come down, and somebody goes up for a layup, probably Taylor Hardiman. And Nolan pins the basketball like on the box, like above the goal, like and flings it back down court, and somebody dunks it on the other end, and Budke stops practice and comes over, and he goes, "Yeah, she can't do that." and everybody just started, like, he was laughing, like, we were all just dying laughing. It was really funny. It was good.
That's hilarious. No, Nolan definitely hung out on the A courts at the Colvin. He was a legit basketball player.
Yeah, you and I were on the C courts probably.
We can make fun of his bio all we want, but he would have swatted our stuff into like the seventh row. So
he listens to this podcast. Much fun. He listens to this podcast, by the way. So hopefully he will text me about hearing that story.
For sure. I have a correction to make. I mentioned on the last podcast that Penny Hardaway was an OSU recruit.
Yeah.
And that Eddie Sutton recruited him. That was actually Leonard Hamilton recruited him.
Wow. Really?
And convinced him. Leonard Hamilton can recruit. You see those guys he had waiting for Eddie? You had Corey Williams. You had Byron Houston.
Richard Dumas.
He's still recruiting lights out at Florida State to this day. He was the one that convinced Penny to come to OSU, but at the last second he went to Memphis. But Penny would have played for Eddie since Leonard Hamilton was let go. So that, could you imagine what Eddie would have done with Penny Hardaway?
Yeah, it would have been spectacular.
Like, he made the Sweet 16, I believe, his first season. But if he would have had freshman Penny on that team, who knows how far they would have gone.
Florida State's pretty good this year, by the way. You're Knowles.
Yeah, Leonard Hamilton's getting it done.
Yeah.
He's still doing it. Still recruiting.
Okay, let's wrap up. You want to talk Tiger for a second?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Farmers Insurance Open. Ricky Fowler will be there. Dustin Johnson, Phil. And your boy Tiger Woods. How are you feeling going into this kind of final chapter of his career? Are you excited? Are you out?
I'm preparing for the worst. Preparing for him to be leading the Masters and then his back give out on him midway through the Saturday round. I'm just kind of hoping he stays in one piece.
Yeah,
that's about it.
I think we all are. I mean, I think it's fun that he's back. Like, I think the aging former superstar is just such a compelling story, and I hope we get a 5 or 6 year run out of him like we've gotten out of Phil. You know, the last 5 or 6 years of Phil won a major, he's finished runner up in all three of the other majors in that time, and I mean, how great would that be? Tiger battling Spieth and Rory and these guys for major championships would be unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, there's already enough star power with golf, but if Tiger enters the mix, that'll be fun. But your boy Rory's kind of taking after Tiger. He's got a hurt back, hurt ribs. What's going on with him?
Yeah, he said he was on.
Can't run. He said he can't run.
Yeah, he was on Shane Bacon, my buddy Shane Bacon's podcast the other day, and said that he hurt it because he was testing new clubs over Christmas, and he was just hitting so many drivers. Like, he's just way more than he usually hits, and he was trying to implement a new kind of swing change at the time, and just kind of tweaked it. So he's out until March, which is a bummer because he's playing really well. I mean, he's, I think, the most talented player in the world. But hopefully he'll be back for Augusta. That's really all that matters for him in terms of early season stuff. Got a chance at the Career Slam. Should be the Masters are going to be unbelievable this year with Tiger being back, Rory, Phil, Spieth revisiting the demons on 12. I mean, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, just the Masters promos are starting to trickle out. Jim Nantz is getting that warm, fuzzy feeling. Yeah, Masters are getting closer by the day.
Nantz is getting the pipes rolling. I'm actually on a we have a conference call with him and some of the other CBS people today. So you got anything you want me to throw at Nantz?
Oh, just ask him any more Freddie Couples stories from Houston. Those are always good.
That can be told on the...
Yeah. But back to Rory, like, why does a guy with four majors tinker with his swing?
That's
the same thing. Yeah. I'll never understand. Like, the swing obviously works. Why are you changing it?
Well, that's a good question. The insinuation was that he had gotten away, like he was watching film of it and he had kind of gotten away from something that he had done previously. So it wasn't trying to change something. It was trying to get back to what he had been doing previously.
Okay. So I got you.
Yeah. I mean, he was still playing pretty good golf, won the Tour Championship, Ryder Cup, burned it down. But yeah, hopefully he'll get back soon.
All right, I'm fired up for the Masters. You know that. You're going this year, right?
Yeah, I'll be there. Second year to go. It should be awesome. I mean, it's such a cool, fun, exhausting week, as you know. But yeah.
Well, you're a longtime patron, but now yes. This is your second year as a media member.
Yeah,
it's much different.
One of the best things about the media deal is the food there is just it's a joke. It's so good. I mean, they got peach ice cream sandwiches, all the pimento cheese you could want. I mean, it's crazy.
Do you need like a guy to hold your recorder or something? go with you? I could just keep pens and pads handy, just follow you around like a caddy. Surely you need one of those guys.
My recorder,
right?
What I need is what everybody in the media tent needs is somebody to go to the shop and buy gear for people that they need to get it for.
That's I could do that.
That place is a madhouse. I would be, Augusta doesn't put it out, but I would be curious to see how much money they make on
merchandise.
Yeah, they don't sell it online. You can only buy it there. I mean, it's just a joke. It's insane.
You'll have to buy me some.
Yeah, I will. Okay,
I'll
Carson.
I'll make my Christmas list.
Yeah, for sure. Mac Daddy Santa.
Yeah.
Okay, Carson, enjoy your weekend. Oklahoma State, Arkansas on Saturday, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
See ya.